So let me just start. So this talk will be a little bit different. It will be more like number theory, like things. Ooh, so let me write down the let me write down the title. The title of my talk is this. So O stands for optimal, and this is mock. And J, what is J? Jacobi form. Okay, so this is the title, and it's based on work that will be finished in no time with John. A lot of it is also based on earlier paper we wrote with Jeff called Umbro Moonshine and Umbro Moonshine Anima Lattices, and as well as what's funnily known as the DMZ. Right, so the plan of the talk is the following. First, intro. And second, it will be the most fun part of the talk, a lot of definitions. And then third, I'll give you the theorems. And four, if time allows, some idea about the proof. And fifth, I will discuss the results and the implications. So let's kind of discuss the theorems. And I'll show you how it means. Okay, so the first part of the intro, I'll start with some motivation. So the first part of the motivation is the following question. The question is very naive but very natural, namely, which mock modular forms are special? And so there's some answer, at least in the case where the weights of the mock modular forms would be a half, or the corresponding Jacobi forms will have weight one. Okay, then DMZ has very often answers to the questions we are wondering about, and also in this case, they say a nice property to impose is optimality. So without going into the details, let me just say fix the modular property or mock modular property. We look at functions with minimal poles. So I'll spell out in more details what that means. So that's a first part of the motivation, that these optimal forms actually are very special and very nice in some sense. Okay, and the second, since we're in a moonshine conference, the second part of the motivation is the properties of Umbro Moonshine. And Jeff has discussed one of the nicest properties very nicely, namely the discriminant property. And in our paper, there's another observation of properties of Umbro Moonshine, namely the genus zero property. So to describe what it is, so recall what John told us this morning. Namely, there are 23 Niemeyer lattices, and we call it Nx, and they are labeled by their root system X, and so let's call the set with 23 elements this Niemeyer root system. And as John told us, they are nothing but the root systems with the following property. First, they are unions of 8DE root systems, simply lace root systems. Second, all the components have the same Cossiter number. And the third one is the total rank has to be the same as the rank of the lattice, namely 24. So if you have 5 minutes, you work it out, there are exactly 23 of them. And so the observation, the genus zero observation, and the second Umbro Moonshine paper says the following. First of all, we ask the question, which are the Hecke congruent subgroup gamma zero n such that its genus is zero? So we say we define the genus of a group of a subgroup of SO2R as the genus of the curve that's given by the upper half plane quotient. Okay, and it turns out that this is satisfied if and only if there's elements there, namely there's a root Niemeyer lattice root system such that the A-type root system with that Cossiter number is contained as a component of the root system. For instance, well, your favorite example.
Huh?
Yes. Your favorite example here, right? Or my favorite example. I'm a simple person. These are examples. Then, and sure enough, gamma 02 and gamma 012 both have genus zero. And similarly, we observed with Jeff that let's consider this group, this type of group. Now we all know what it is. This, thanks to Roberto, this is the corresponding Eckenliner involution. So this group has genus zero if and only if blah, 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 blah. It's the same. And the D type with the Cossiter number 2n is present. So that's n plus. That's n plus 1. And the A type is not there. Okay?
And big N is odd in the second line.
Yeah, so this is an odd number.
Sorry,
okay. Sorry?
What is the meaning of that?
Oh, so we have seen that for each exact divisors of, let's say, M, you can define the Atkin-Lerner involutions, and then you attach that to gamma 0 M, and that's the notation. And is that clear to everybody? So I can skip repeating. Yeah. Thank you, Roberto. Right, so these are actually pretty, we found it pretty striking, this genus zero property, because both are, well, on the right-hand side, it's clear that we have a finite list. Well, on the left-hand side, you have to consider arbitrary integer n, but however, this comes out to be true. So that's the second part of the motivation for the current work. Yeah, it doesn't happen, but I'll tell you in a minute why.
Some extension of gamma zero.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually.
Your story or?
Yes, you are. You should be. Bad co-organizer. No. Oh, shit, I'm being recorded.
Okay.
Okay. So now I can skip this. The next part will be define the Atkin-Lehner group. But thanks to Roberto, this no longer has to be done. So let's just introduce some notation. Okay, so we know that for each exact divisors, we can define given an positive integer, then consider its set of exact divisors. So I think Roberto showed that in the slides, but let me just spell that out again. So this is an exact, this is an divisor such that these two numbers are co-prime to each other. And we can see that this is an abelian group under the multiplication that's simply given by E times F and divided by each of them divided by its GCD. Okay. In particular, if you take F to be E, then this is 1, always 1 on the right-hand side. So now, given also a subgroup of the exact divisors, and then we can consider the group gamma M plus K as the Hecke congruent subgroup with the corresponding Atkin-Lehner involution attached to this, okay? And we'll adapt the notation. For instance, let's take M to be 6 and K to be 1 and 3. So you can check that this is indeed a subgroup. And then we can write, in this case, gamma 0 plus M plus K. We write it as gamma 0, 6 plus 3. So we adopt the notation that we skip writing down 1 because 1 is always there. All right. So that's the notation. So now I'm ready to state my result. And this could be the last 5 minutes that you look at the blackboard because then I tell you the results. Okay. So the result is the following. So let's now consider a set of such groups given by a pair M and the subgroup of its exact divisors. Moreover, we want to restrict to the non-Fricke type. And then as Roberto told us, a Fricke means the special case where one element of K is just M itself. So then non-Fricke just means it's not the case, okay? And then we wanna restrict to the case that the genus of the group is actually 0. So again, it's a priori an infinite problem, but it would turn out that this set is a finite set. In particular, this set has 39 elements. Sorry.
Is there some reason why you had to do non-Fricke?
Yes, I'll explain that. Yeah. Basically, because of the minus sign, you go from R to minus R. So if you put Fricke in it, in the definition, then you force your form to the 0. But that will only be apparent once I wrote down all the definitions. Okay. So there are 39 such groups. And then we can divide the set into 2. And then we have the following results. First, I will define something called the symmetric optimal Jacobi form. And here we're, again, always working at weight 1. of type n plus k. At the moment, it doesn't make sense because I haven't actually given you the definition. But then the striking thing is that with this definition, such a form exists if and only if with this pair, the corresponding group has genus zero and is hence in this set. Moreover, it is unique when it exists. Okay, so we can just call it psi n plus k. Okay, if you're patient, you'll wait and then the definition will come. So no matter what the definition is, I can assure you that they are good in the sense that they span the space of optimal Mach-Jacobi forms, in particular in a notation that I will introduce only later. This is the result. Of course, on the right-hand side, you have to fix M and then only pick such the subgroup of exact divisors of M such that this guy is in the set, okay? That the genus zero property is there. And the third thing is that a positivity singles out the subgroup, the subset S and indeed this set actually turns out to be isomorphic to the set of Niemeyer lattices, and indeed the corresponding symmetric optimal Mach-Jacobi forms is nothing but the Jacobi form, the Mach-Jacobi forms that's available, that's responsible for umbral moonshine, okay? And this only holds for the subset this, okay? And finally, that you have to wait till the end. But anyways, if you decompose it properly, I'm kidding. Now, if you decompose it properly, all the Fourier coefficients are positive. So it only happens if and only if this guy is. Actually, there's a second more subtle version of possibility, of positivity that I might not have the chance to tell you that also does the job to single them out. Okay.
So you have positivity among the 39?
No, positivity just, you know, you take one of them. Amongst the 39, you. You single out from this set, yes. And it turns out all Ramanujans Mach theta function arise from the symmetric optimal Mach-Jacobi form. So arguably, this is the natural language to discuss Mach theta functions.
So can I just understand one aspect of the result? Is this a proof that that these are the only?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's a proof.
You say fix M, but then the statement also holds.
Right.
For
Yeah. So you should read the point B as, you know, in the English version,
okay.
They span the space. Yeah. So Don joked that the result should be called the 39 steps for those of you. Anyways. Okay. It's not funny. I'm sorry. So the second part of the talk, are there more questions to the introduction?
This is closely related to Michael Chu's criterion again, I think. Positivity, when you get the leech or the moonshine theory when you're wonderful.
Right. And of course, the whole optimality condition smells a lot like, you know, the help module condition. So, right. And okay, I should also stress that I hope you agree with me that these results explain the observation in our Umbra Moonshine paper in some sense. Okay, so more question before I go to the definition? Okay, so let's define things. Yeah, thank you for sparing me.
Mach theory functions, I mean, you know, the only distinguishing characteristic before this is that you wrote them down. Do nobody else's Mach theory functions appear on this list?
Yes, there are some other people's theta functions also appear in this list. Yeah, you remember we have the multiplicative relations. I mean,
it's not like somehow he knew secretly about this.
He missed something
What? I don't think he was secretly working out all the optimal Mach-Jacobi forms. Although, who knows? Okay. All right. Great question. That's a project. No, I don't know. Right. It's less. Yeah, and also there's ambiguities. Yeah. Okay, so I'm ready for a definition. Okay, so to spare the pain, I wrote this down to start in advance. So first part of the definition, we define Jacobi forms, and thanks to Clan, he has defined it actually in his talk, but let's do it again because we need different variations. So let's look at a function from the upper half plane times the complex plane to C, and then we require it from the beginning just to be holomorphic in C. And then we define these two actions. The first one is labeled by one integer, which is called m. And the second is labeled by two integers, k, which will be what we call the weight. And then m, again, this will be the index of the Jacobi form. And then we say that this function, okay, satisfying that condition, the holomorphicity in C, is an elliptic form. And we call the space of elliptic form E sub m if it's invariant under the first action for all lambda and mu being an integer. Okay? So from this property, you can already deduce the property that Alvesh talked about, namely, they have a decomposition into the theta functions. So if I write it down again, this theta functions will be. Okay, so you actually don't need the full Jacobi form property to have this decomposition, all right? So later I'll usually use this shorthand notation just, so if I write it like this, it means this, all right? And again, Q is the exponential of 2 pi I tau, and Y is the exponential of 2 pi I z. So that's the definition of an elliptic form. And now I have to put more condition to get to the Jacobi form. So the second thing I want to discuss, I want to define is a Jacobi form of weight k and index m. So in particular, it has to be satisfy the elliptic form condition. And if moreover, it's also holomorphic in tau, and moreover, it satisfies this modulus transformation property, then we say that it's a weight k index m Jacobi form subjected to the usual growth condition that Albers talked about. And actually, As Albert said, that you can define this Fourier coefficients in this way, and because of the symmetries of because of property E, the elliptic property there, or in physics terms, it's the spectral flow property, then actually this Fourier coefficient only depends mod 2m, twice of the index on the second thing here. Okay, so that's Jacobi form. And we need something else that is a slightly different beast. They're called the skew holomorphic Jacobi forms. And again, they have to be, a skew holomorphic Jacobi form is necessarily an elliptic form. And moreover, it satisfies, it has to admit this kind of expansion. And you can see that this function is no longer holomorphic in tau. It has this Q bar factor here. All right. And its transformation is almost the same as the transformation of the of a Jacobi form. All you have to do is to replace C tau plus D to the power K with a C tau bar plus D to the power K plus K minus one times this absolute value thing. Okay? So that's the definition of skew holomorphic Jacobi form, and I'll show you shortly why we need it. So one remark is, okay, since both a skew holomorphic and holomorphic Jacobi form is an elliptic form, so both type admit such an expansion into theta functions. But, and also because they have this transformation property, modular property, so they're, in both cases, H is a vector-valued thing that is modular, but H is holomorphic when the function is holomorphic, when the Jacobi form is holomorphic, and H is an anti-holomorphic function if we're talking about a skew holomorphic Jacobi form.
Maybe K minus 1/2 and 1/2?
No, oh, yeah, because this is half plus a half. Yeah. Everything's under control. Okay, more question? All right. So the definition makes sense. That's good. So now, right. So here I'm going to be a slightly more. When I define actually the things I need. Yeah, so I didn't write it down. I just said that Albrecht has talked about it. Lazy of me, sorry. So now I'm going to define what I call the mock Jacobi form. Okay, now it's an object that's holomorphic in both variables. And then first it has to be elliptic of index m. That means it's guaranteed that it has this expansion. Second, as Jeff said, it has to be weakly holomorphic. Namely, it has to admit this expansion with the property that this is zero when minus omega plus is smaller than zero. Okay? And third, this is where the definition of skew holomorphic Jacobi forms comes in handy. Namely, we need a skew holomorphic Jacobi form of sort of the dual weight, such that, okay, so of course we can decompose it in this way as usual, such that we can define these objects. It looks a little bit horrible, so let's go through it. So we define this object, first we dress the coefficient in the theta expansion up with a non-holomorphic correction term. So what is this non-holomorphic correction? It's neither. Yeah. So G star is given by this Eichler integral here, which is controlled by this function here that arises from the decomposition of the skew holomorphic Jacobi form. Okay, so you perform the Eichler integral in this case, and then you add that piece to the original function such that You no longer have a holomorphic function, but the dressed up function satisfies the modular property as well as the elliptic property, but that's just by definition true. Okay? So this is our definition for a Mach-Jacobi form. Is that okay? Right, or you can say that it's a pair of psi and sigma. So this is what we call, in our sort of terminology, we call this guy the Mach-Jacobi form, and this guy would be its shadow. So a bit more formally, we define a shadow map that maps the space of Mach-Jacobi form of weight k and index n to the space of skew holomorphic cusp Jacobi form of the dual index and the same to dual weight and the same index. So actually, to be very honest, this is sort of a part of our definition that we want the shadow to be cusp. Okay, but with this definition, this is the case. This is a short exact sequence. So. That's a lot of definition. So let me show you a theorem that's very nice. Then that shows us the comment, that demonstrates the comment that Samir made, namely it's nice at weight one and it's less nice otherwise.
One more comment. Actually, at weight two, you won't have plenty of examples where S is not
possible. Yeah, indeed. So indeed, I'm slightly lying here. Yeah. So the theorem says that at weight one, if we have two Mach-Jacobi forms of the same index and its polar coefficient is identical, for all okay, then psi 1 equals psi 2. Okay, a few remarks here. First, I hope you can see why these are the polar coefficients, because when you do this expansion, so these terms with delta larger than 0 are precisely the terms that blows up at I infinity in the function h. Okay, so these are the polar terms.
So this is
Golub plus theorem. No, this is what I'm going to write down. So it takes a few things. and we put slightly a tiny bit of work after you guys. So first recall that this says nothing about the shadow. I'm not forcing the two. If I say the polar parts are identical and the shadow are identical, then it's Skorupa's theorem. But the last bit you have to add to this is that it actually doesn't care about the shadow. Even without specifying the shadow, it is true. It's not difficult to prove. We can talk afterwards. All right. So the last bit of the definition, I have to define for you the stuff that I actually talked about, namely the optimal Jacobi forms. So let me erase this one. What?
Do you use the self-start theorem?
Skorupa doesn't be using it, that I think.
Well, so okay, we
so
need.
We just use group.
This sounds weird. We use group. No, but I can. Huh? Yeah. Okay. Yes. So now let's define the optimal Mach-Jacobi form. So it is as what you think. So of course it has to be first of all a Mach-Jacobi form, and moreover, we require that the pole cannot be deeper than the minimal allowed one. So why? Well, if you look at this theorem, okay? So if they're all zero, if there's no polar terms, so then they are basically a holomorphic thing. So Skvorupa will tell us that this thing doesn't exist. So we want to, if you want to get something non-trivial, then the minimal thing you can do is to have a minimal set of poles, and that's what we require. And again, this is inspired by DMZ, or not, just taken from DMZ. So one clear consequence is that let me just write it down. So basically what we want to ask is what kind of polar coefficients can we have such that this form actually exists? We already know that it's unique if it exists. Now the question is when it exists. And then we start from the obvious thing. Ah, yes. Well, otherwise, there's nothing, as I said. Thank you. So one very clear thing is that this necessarily vanishes, this polar coefficients, unless r squared equals 1 mod 4m. The reason is, okay, here, if you put in delta to be 1, so this power is 4m l squared minus 1, but this power has to be an integer because the whole thing needs to be invariant when you change tau to tau plus 1. So this is an obvious consequence. So we define this set of numbers, mod 2m, and it's not hard to convince yourself that this is actually isomorphic to the group of exact divisors. And the isomorphism is given by this. We associate an R of n, which is the unique element of this set Rn, satisfying the following condition. Okay? And moreover, it's also isomorphic as a group because the multiplication here is nothing but the multiplication here. So now, coming back to Jeff's question, why we want to exclude the situation when n is m, namely the Fricke case? Because from the modular property m here, somewhere there, we conclude that the Fourier coefficients has this anti-invariance under the reflection. And R2 minus R is nothing but this. But multiplication by M, okay, with this modified multiplication, this is the same as this. So you want to impose this condition such that you throw out things that obviously don't work. So with this definition, you define for a K that is a subgroup of the exact divisor, again, it has to be non-Fricke. This number, this map from the exact divisor to 0 plus or minus 1 in the following way. Okay, so now we can define the symmetric optimal Jacobi form if I have some Bohr space. Yeah, that's a definition of the an optimal Mach Jacobi form is a Mach Jacobi form such that the pole cannot be deeper than the minimal unit. So I definitely will not have time to discuss the proof, but I'll at least write down the theorem and tells you maybe a few things that's cool about it. So now I can finally define the symmetric optimal Mach modular form of type that's given by this pair M and its subgroup of the exact divisor K. So it's simply defined if the polar coefficient is 1, minus 1, or 0, depending on this map. And we'll put in Jeff's favorite minus 2 here. And this for all n, namely for all sort of r that can possibly have a non-trivial polar coefficient. And since that theorem, the theorem I told you, I erased, told us that this guy is unique, and we'll just call it psi n. Okay? So now, finally, I'm done with definition. Let me write down the results. So the theorem, the symmetric theorem, so it says that for all pair m plus k, then such a thing exists. Yes, I will say that in 1 second. Right. Okay. It exists if and only if the corresponding group has genus 0. And hence, as we have seen, this group is in this set of 39 that we wrote down. And the second theorem is, as I said, that they span the space of optimal Mach Jacobi forms. So indeed, this is quite striking because here I'm just defining some polar coefficient. What it has to do with the, you know, some SO2R subgroup on the acting on the upper half plane is completely non-obvious at the moment. But let me just tell you one thing. So we know, what's the symmetry? We know that there's the so-called Eichler-Zagier operator or involution, which can defined for all index m, and it's an involution acting on the space of this index m elliptic forms. Okay, and also it preserves the Mach-Jacobi property. So this is again, okay. And when we act, when we consider this form acting, this a given Eichler-Zagier involution acting on our symmetric form, and we can see how the polar coefficients in particular get shuffled around, and we will conclude that the result is the resulting Mach-Jacobi form again has the same polar coefficient if this n is in the subgroup. Okay, and since we have this uniqueness theorem saying if the polar parts are the same and the whole thing is the same, we conclude that this is symmetric under the corresponding Eichler-Zagier operations. And this would be an important tool we use in order to prove it. So I'm running out of time, so I'll skip part four. I'll just tell you a few things about our result, about these theorems. It is possible. Everything is possible. But I see that Jeff is defining it over there. So all is good. So who's the chair? Can I have, oh, yeah, I started at 10 past, right? So can I have a bit more time? Okay. So I'll discuss a few properties about our results. First, shadows. So one thing I find cool about this discussion is we only talked about the polar parts. We never discuss, we never force what the shadow should be. And I didn't have time to tell you the proof, but one important property of the proof is that from the existence of this form, we can show that the space of weight two form of the corresponding group has to be trivial, and hence the genus is zero. So we use the property of the genus zero groups that it doesn't have any weight two form. But there's another salient feature of the genus zero group, namely, it's genus zero. So we need something. We have a function that actually induces this isomorphism. And actually, using the Haupt module will give us a map to the shadow of the corresponding symmetric Mach-Jacobi form. So the shadow of the function, although it's not a part of the construction, is completely under control and is actually given by certain Haupt modules of the genus zero group. Okay, so property two. So in DMZ, following the pioneering work of Zagier, we have seen that Mach-Jacobi forms are closely related to meromorphic Jacobi forms. In particular, we have a completely well-defined map to separate meromorphic Jacobi forms of weight one, and in particular, and with simple poles into the finite part and the polar part. So this guy is Jacobi, is modular, but it's meromorphic. And this guy is mock and holomorphic. Holomorphic and meromorphic, I'm referring to the Z variable now. And this guy is just polar and not holo, not and polar and meromorphic and mock. Okay. So, I say who? Oh, I say someone else. Oh, they both started with Z. What can I do? Oh, no. I apologize. I did mean Schwegers for sure. Thank you for catching that. So it turns out that also for all the symmetric optimal Mach-Jacobi forms that we discussed, there exists such a meromorphic form such that the finite part coming a la Dreyfus coincides with our symmetric Jacobi form. So again, that fits the pattern. And the third thing is the positivity. And that will link us more directly to Umbra Moonshine. So the positivity is the statement is the following. This is going to be a bore disaster. So let me actually not stop. Don't be lazy and actually erase some space. Okay, so positivity says that there are actually two versions, and I give you only one, so that you have to talk to me afterwards. We know that it's guaranteed that it will have this kind of decomposition, and now we actually break the symmetry of shifting by 2m. And force ourselves to work in this range, employing the anti-symmetry fact here. Okay, so we write it in this way. And then we expand it. So now, in order to make contact with Moonshine, we have to be bloody explicit. Okay? And the fact is, it's a true fact. This number is positive, non-negative, for all things with negative discriminant, if and only if this is in the subset of the 39, namely it's in a certain set that has in particular 23 elements. And the relation to the Umbra Moonshine function is, I won't write the module down because John has done this in the morning. So this number actually will become the dimension of the homogeneous subspace of the conjectural module that exists. Okay?
So is this positivity the same thing that John talked about this morning?
It's a special case because it could still happen that this, after you decompose it, you get some rational number or they're all the. These numbers are always integral for the 39 cases, but the positivity only holds for the Umbra Moonshine cases. Okay, so the fourth property is just that we get all the Ramanujan's function from this formalism. So if there's no more question, I can finish.
So the non-trivial theorem seems to be the symmetric theorem, right? Because after that, I can imagine some algebraic operator.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for asking me. Okay. Yeah, so this after you have this and to go to this, you basically have to do the Eichler-Zagier involution and project it to, yeah. So yes, I'll give this very short summary of the proof. So the first step, and again, this is basically some work of what we have done with Jeff. The first step is that you have to prove a lemma saying that if such a thing exists, then the L function of what? I'll tell you. At the special value, so this is basically just a period of so the L function at this special value for all the weight 2 form of the corresponding group has to vanish. So you want a proof of this? This is basically Alaska-Rupa. And once you have this lemma, and yeah. So it's just a period. Yeah. So that's actually important for what I'm going to say just now. Okay. So is then you have to combine it with the fact that we have mentioned a few times already, or something like that. Namely, the space of holomorphic differentials on this elliptic curve. No, not the elliptic curve, on this Riemann surface is isomorphic to the space of weight 2 form. This is a classical thing about modular forms. And you use the Abo theorem saying, well, if all the periods of the differential forms vanish and they have to be blah, 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 basically forcing the curve to be zero. So here again, it's actually important that the group is non-Frege, otherwise these 2 points will be identified. So this basically leads to the theorem of symmetric forms. And then you use the Eichler-Zagier thing too. More question? Yeah?
Presumably these are all
and I should also mention that for some of them that didn't appear in Umbral Moonshine, I think for 3 cases, they actually already appeared in DMZ as those Qs, as the maximally. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a round of applause.